Support for today's podcast of Parenting Great Kids comes from podsurvey.com. In order to support our show, we'll need the help of some great advertisers. And in order to find great advertisers, we'll need to learn a little bit more about you. So please go to podsurvey.com/Meg and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you a little better. That way, we can show advertisers just how great our listeners are. Plus, once you've completed the survey, you can choose to enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's podsurvey.com/Meg. Thanks for your help.
For 30 plus years, I've seen every type of child grow up.
Instead of giving me what I wanted, she gave me what I needed, which was truth.
Don't let emotions win. Let truth win.
Do your very best, and you should have a lot of fun while you do it. And the better you get at something, the more fun you're going to have at something.
You moms and dads are wired with everything you need to be a parent to a great kid.
Welcome to Parenting Great Kids. This is episode number 76, and I am your host, Dr. Meg Meeker. Today, my guest is my wonderful friend, Dr. Henry Cloud. Dr. Cloud is an acclaimed leadership expert, psychologist, and best-selling author. Dr. Cloud is a New York Times best-selling author, and his books have sold over 10 million copies. His leadership book, Integrity, was dubbed by the New York Times as the best book in the bunch. In 2011, Necessary Endings was called the most important book you'll read all year. His work has been featured and reviewed by the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Boston Globe, Publishers Weekly, Los Angeles Times, and many other publications. He lives in Los Angeles with his wife and two daughters. As always in the podcast, I'll share my points to ponder so you can start using them right away. And parents, as a reminder, don't just download the episodes. Remember to click subscribe, because when you do that, you are joining my parenting revolution, and every new episode will automatically show up in your subscribe list. I promise you won't regret it. And please write us a review on iTunes and let me know what you think about the podcast. Also, not only are we on iTunes, but the Parenting Great Kids podcast is also available in the Google Play Store and on Stitcher. So no matter where you get your podcast, subscribe today so you won't miss a single episode. Friends, do you get sick of hearing your kids argue? With you arguing with your kids? With your kids never listening to you? Well, I have an answer for you. Discipline with Courage and Kindness is my brand new course on discipline that any parent can use, whether your child is 2 or 15 or 18. So I really encourage you to check it out. So parents, thanks for listening. This is episode number 76. Stay with us. I want you now to listen in on a conversation I had with Dr. Henry Cloud. I know you're really going to love it. Well, welcome, everybody. I am excited to be with my good friend, brilliant man, Dr. Henry Cloud. And we are... Don't look at me that way, Henry.
No, the brilliant guy couldn't show up, Meg. I came instead.
Oh, no. We are at the Dave Ramsey Smart Conference in Kansas City. So if you hear some background noise, that's why. But Henry, thank you so much for giving the time to for me to pick your brilliant brain.
Well, it's good to be here. The reason we're here doing this is because we weren't smart enough to get in the Smart Conference. So
there you go.
All these guys are getting the leftovers.
Yeah. You wrote a wonderful book on boundaries, and a lot of our readers or a lot of our listeners know about your book. But what I'd like to talk about today, because we our audience is parents, is how you set boundaries, because I just wrote a whole program on discipline, and discipline is like setting boundaries for your kids. How to set boundaries for your kids and get them to change their behavior. So talk to me about how a parent changes a child's behavior and what's involved.
Well, first of all, it depends on the age of the child, but let me go back and kind of broaden a little bit in terms of, you know, when we think of discipline, that word actually it actually means to instruct or teach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have disciples. That's a discipline. And when you think of a discipline of, like, you're a doctor, the discipline of medicine, mm-hmm. right? There, when we're talking about disciplining kids, remember, whenever you're parenting, the goal of parenting is the future.
Right.
It's not the present. The goal of everything you do as a parent is you are training and preparing them for life. Okay, so I'll give you an example. I was at some friend's house, and then the phone rang, and he got on the phone, and she walked down the hall, and I'm sitting there in the kitchen, and I wonder where Allison went, and so I'm walking down the hall, and I walk by their 14-year-old son's room. And she's in there just scurrying around, picking up stuff and straightening up and all this. And I looked at her and said, "What are you doing?" Mm-hmm. And she said, "Well, I'm cleaning Cameron's room."
Classic mom behavior.
Yeah.
I've been there, done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she looks at me and goes, "What? What's wrong?" I said, "Nothing. I'm just thinking about his future wife."
Yeah.
And she looked like a truck had hit her. She said, "I never thought about it that way." Okay, today it's homework. Tomorrow it's the IRS.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Today it's getting that homework done. Tomorrow it's turning in your tax returns. Mm-hmm. Today it's a teacher. Tomorrow it's a boss. Today it's a friend or a sibling they're squabbling with. Tomorrow it's going to be a friend they lose or a spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, we're really using every single moment to disciple. That's what discipline is.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about changing behavior, you really have got to begin with the, you know, when we say, "I'm going to change the behavior of my child," remember that it's really, really important to get in our heads, who can change that behavior? I can't change the behavior of my child. It's not my behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It's my daughter's behavior, because I have two daughters.
Mm-hmm.
It's her, only she can change that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've got to do is I have got to manage the process so she changes her behavior. And generally what we're doing a lot of times when we're not doing this well is we are trying to pressure or control the child into changing their behavior. But when you think about that, that's not self-control, that's parent control.
Right.
So what I want is I want the child to change their behavior because I have managed the process in a way that causes them to want to change their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of ways that we can do that. For example, you know, trying to get them to brush their teeth when they're little.
So that's a great question. You have a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
They're fairly independent. How do you get them to brush their teeth?
Okay. Susie, you know what? Do you want a bedtime story?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you want to get to pick the book?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay. So you get to pick the book as soon as you go brush your teeth. Instead of go brush your teeth, go brush your teeth, go brush your teeth. See, I want Susie to go brush her teeth. And she says, "Well, I don't want to do that." Okay, well, then there's no story tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Or, well, you know, you don't have to do that, but you can go sit. You can go sit in the corner until you want to.
Mm-hmm.
We can do that.
And then she screams.
And she screams. Okay. "Oh, Susie, you're going to scream." You know what? I don't like listening to screaming. I really don't. So if you're going to scream, then you have to go sit in the timeout thing and scream up here, but I won't be able to hear you, so I'll come back and check on you, you know, in a few minutes and see if you stop screaming. I'll open the door and see if you stop screaming. If you have, then maybe we can figure out how to have a story."
Mm-hmm.
Be amazed how fast Susie learns to not scream. One of the things I used to do with my girls, you know, put them in time. They start to go crazy. They go, "Okay, Libby, now here's how it works. Timeout starts when you've stopped screaming."
Oh.
So as soon as you stop screaming, I'll set the timer, and then you have another 2 minutes, okay, to sit quietly. But if you start screaming again, then you have to start it over. Okay? So now we're teaching them to make connections in their head between my behavior matters because my behavior has a consequence to it. Mm-hmm. And we're building something called anticipatory anxiety. Mm-hmm. That's why you and I don't, you know, run a red light, because mm-hmm. we look and go, oh, I better not do that. I'll be in timeout in a hospital.
Right. Yes, I do that. So really, you're motivating them in a very positive way by implementing consequences that... So they have to be motivated to avoid the consequence.
Well, they're already motivated.
Why would they be motivated to brush their teeth? Because they
they're not motivated to brush their teeth. They're motivated to have a story, and they're motivated to spend time free and not in timeout.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. They don't care. That's why when parents say, you need to brush your teeth, the parent's crazy. Kid has no need to brush your teeth.
Right. What? Yeah. Yeah.
They don't. Right. You hear parents say this all the time. You need to go do your homework. And the kid looks at him like, what language are you speaking? I have no need to do my homework.
Right.
The parent has a need. So what we got to do is transfer the need to do homework from the shoulders of the parent to the only person who can do the homework.
Is the child.
Is the child.
One of the struggles that I see parents have is that when they implement consequences, they don't like to do that because they feel they're going to alienate their child. For instance, I have a teenager. His curfew is 10:30 at night. He shows up at 10:45, and... You know, mom or dad says, okay, you can't drive the car for a week. And then after a couple of days, they say, well, okay, it wasn't that bad. You can have the car back, because I don't want to feel like a mean parent. Talk about why they're not a mean parent to make the consequence stick.
Can I say something about the consequence first?
Sure.
Let me give you a little better consequence than that. Curfew is at 10:30. Get there at 10:45. Oh, shoot, you overshot your curfew by 15 minutes. Curfew tomorrow is at 10:15. If you make that one, you get 10:30 back. See, now we're tying the consequences as closely as we can to the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't always do that, but that's what you want to do, because that is kind of the reality that gets them to focus on this particular behavior, right? So now ultimately you get 3 infractions of that, then you don't get the car for a week, and you won't have the chance. I don't have to worry about you being here at 10:15, because you're not going anywhere, right? So it all builds. So that's kind of part of it. But the part about a parent being a mean parent, that gets into a lot of different issues. And what I find is this is very different for different individuals. So, you know, it's really interesting. Probably the greatest parenting book is Leviticus. I mean, it's just all there. You just go through the law, and it's just right there. Now, how many parenting problems could be solved with 2 little verses, or was it 3? Leviticus chapter 19, 15 and 17, I think, says this. Do not pervert justice. Okay, so justice is the law, mm-hmm. right? What we're, you know, you're supposed to be in at 10:30, right? Mm-hmm. Curfew's at 10:30. It says, do not pervert justice. Now, pervert means to twist, or, you know, not make it like it ought to be. It says, do not pervert justice. And then it tells you the 2 times you're going to do this as a parent. Do not be partial to the needy, nor defer to the great and powerful. It says, rebuke your neighbor, your child, frankly, and then here's the kicker, so you will not share in their guilt.
Mm.
In other words, you are part of the problem. If you're not setting limits, you're part of the problem.
Right.
It's not just the bad child. Okay, so let's go back to those 2 words. Do not be partial to the needy or defer to the great and powerful. So how does that look in a kid? Well, you got the one that they're the needy one, right? They're scatter. Well, I didn't know, you know. That's my scatterbrain child. You know, she always needs, or he always needs a little more. Or I don't want to be mean. That's seeing a child that's needy,
mm-hmm.
because they have to show up on time.
Mm-hmm.
That's not needy. That's just life. So
yeah.
Stop calling pain harm. Pain is very, very good for us. Okay, when I bang my head against the wall, God wired it so I get consequences, and I'll stop banging my head up against the wall. When I'm late for my curfew, there should be some pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's different than harm. You're right. Not harming your child.
It feels like it.
No. It doesn't feel like it. That's your feeling as the parent.
Okay, that's
see, I can't feel. Yeah. I can't feel like I'm harming my child. I can feel guilty. I can feel devastatingly sad because I'm over-identifying with a child and acting like missing 15 minutes means he's lost everything good in life because he's telling me that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get separate from the child. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to figure out, this is what I meant earlier, why does saying no to a kid feel like so awful to you? Now we got to look at our own histories, because maybe you had a very harsh disciplinarian parent.
Mm-hmm.
And when they set limits, it did decimate you.
Mm-hmm.
They called you names. They did it in anger, in this, that, and the other. So now your limit setting button inside is identified with injury, not with something helpful.
And usually that's subconscious, and, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you just over-identify. But you gotta remember, Meg, this is, you will destroy your children if you don't give them limits.
Yeah.
And they're going to hate every limit you ever give them.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite passages in Hebrews, it says, all discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful but sorrowful. But in the end, it produces the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Now think about this. Your 17-year-old, when they go brush their teeth, you don't hear them throwing a temper tantrum. Now, I want you to think about this. It's not that painful anymore, is it?
No.
No. The peaceful fruit of right. See, it's peaceful when they brush their teeth now. But you will never get there if you don't go through the first half of the verse.
Right.
All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful but sorrowful. You will get the temper tantrum. That's your job. And if you, as a parent, if your kids are never mad at you, you're not parenting.
Right. Yeah. I've said that over and over to parents. Let's talk about teenagers and electronics. I get a lot of questions about that say something like this.
We just added a chapter to the Boundaries book.
Oh, did you?
On boundaries in the digital age. A lot of it's about parenting, too.
Well, there you go.
Parenting and husbands, which is kind of the same thing.
Shh. Let's not let that out. I get a lot of questions. My 15-year-old, either for boys, is playing video games 6 hours a day, and I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get him off. Or for a 14, 15-year-old girl, it's my daughter's on social media, and I don't know what to do. Now, what a parent needs to do is setting boundaries and discipline, because I wrote a course, Discipline with Courage and Kindness, addresses this, that the clear thing to do is set boundaries. You and I know that because we've watched a lot of people and parents. Talk to the parent who says, I don't know what to do with my 15-year-old son because he's just almost addicted to video games.
Well, have you ever thought of canceling the cable?
Well, this is on his iPhone.
Well, you then cancel Verizon.
Yeah.
Wait. The reason I'm saying that, I know that sounds draconian and extreme, okay? But what I'm pointing there is at the, I don't know what to do, okay? Mm-hmm. Because at some level, the parent is feeling paralyzed and helpless, because anybody would know what to do in terms of there's stuff we can do, but they've got some kind of fear that's keeping them from doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so simply what to do is we sit down beforehand and we talk about what are the guidelines for us as a family for our digital lives. When my daughters got cell phones, okay, I said, okay, you can have a phone or you can have a computer or whatever, but what I want you to do is I want you guys to go do some research, and I want you to write me a, and I think I gave him like 3 or 5 pages or something, a 3 or 5 page report on kind of the good things, the good uses of the digital world for teenagers, and the dangers and the bad uses, and what kind of like the sort of accepted kind of what people out there think are smart guidelines. And then we're going to sit down together as a family, and I want you to bring a suggested rule sheet, including consequences and all of that, and then we'll sit down as a family council, and we'll make the rules. Mm-hmm. And you'll get your phone.
When we agree on something. So were your rules and your consequences very different from your girls when they brought you the list?
The biggest, yes and no. What surprised me was they were pretty clear about, you know, violations, then, you know, this happens or that happens. Mm-hmm. Probably what was a little different, and which took a little, you know, kind of played itself out over time as we worked with it, was the kind of the quantitative aspects of it, like how much time, mm-hmm. you know, because there is a fluidity to this. In one of the things I think we have to understand, you know, when I was in high school, if you were watching TV, you weren't doing your homework.
Right.
What I've learned with my girls is there are a lot of times there'll be 2 or 3 of them together actually working on homework. And they're FaceTiming with 2 or 3 others
right.
who are in their study group, and they're all doing it together. Or they're out and about doing something social, and they're on their phones doing something social with 2 or 3 other friends 100 miles away. Mm-hmm. And so I had to get away from some of the rigidity about touching or looking at a phone is always bad or always kind of like not part of life, because they live differently than we do.
They do.
Yeah. And that's got to be understood. At the same time, there's, you know, there's a lot of ways in which they're not present relationally a lot of times.
Right.
They're not focused relationally or task-wise, and you have to set some limits. And
so you really have to know what the girls are doing. Parents, I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Dr. Cloud. We need to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more of my conversation with Dr. Henry Cloud. Friends, support for today's show comes from Third Love. Third Love uses data points generated by millions of women who have taken their Fit Finder quiz to design bras with breast size and shape in mind. The results? A perfect fit and premium feel. Simply answer a few questions to find your perfect fit in 60 seconds. Then once you receive your bra, you can wear it, wash it, and put it to the test for 60 days. And if you don't love it, return it, and Third Love will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. It's all part of their 100% fit guarantee. This is hands down the most comfortable bra you'll own, with straps that won't slip, tagless labels, and lightweight, super thin memory foam cups. They even have a line of incredibly soft and breathable cotton bras. And friends, I will tell you, truly, when you put a Third Love bra on, you don't even know you're wearing a bra. You don't get pinched. You don't get marks from wearing a bra that's too tight. And the straps really don't hurt or move. You've got to try Third Love out. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone. So right now, they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/Meg now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/Meg for 15% off today. Parents, dreaming of a beach vacation? Start planning your escape to Panama City Beach, Florida. Imagine spending your days doing things you love, all in the setting of sugar-white beaches and turquoise waters, Discover endless family fun, heart-pounding thrills, eco-adventure, and romance. Make it memorable. Get up close to dolphins in their natural habitat on a boat tour. Give paddleboarding a try or just lounge under an umbrella. There's so much fun, it'll make your family's head spin. Make it exhilarating. Find your thrills flying on a jet ski, kayaking at sunset, or snorkeling in turquoise waters. It's everything an adrenaline junkie lives for. Make it incredible. Bike along the beach, take an airboat tour, or explore the secluded beauty of two state parks. PCB offers one eco-adventure after another. Make it special with a romantic getaway. Relax and reconnect with dining on the beach, breathtaking sunsets, and enough live music to dance the night away. So make it yours. Make it Panama City Beach, your real fun beach. Plan your escape now at visitpanamacitybeach.com. One of the things I found is that girls will be on social media just texting each other back and forth, back and forth. They'll be on Instagram and they're comparing themselves to other kids. Yeah. But hours and hours will go by. And when mom or dad says, you know, let's say that you can be checking your Instagram for half hour in the morning and half hour the night. And what they'll find out is the girls are doing it really 2 hours in the morning and then 2 hours in the evening, and then they're going to school in a class checking on their Instagram. So how do you coach your kids on stopping that kind of behavior?
Well, I try to back up a little before that and kind of talk about it with them in terms of what are the reality consequences and the reality interferences of this. You know, like let's look at I want you to do your homework by, you know, certain time, mm-hmm. or whatever. And you're saying, well, you can get that done, and you can also do whatever while you're doing that or around that or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, okay, we'll see. We'll inspect it.
You inspect the homework or you look at the grades?
Well, no, you don't wait till the grades. That's like a coach looking at the final score of a football game.
Right.
I mean, that to get out of that, yeah. using grades as a discipline, mm-hmm. that's like, you know, that would be the equivalent of a couple, you know, looking at the divorce papers to try to make their marriage better, right? So what you have to measure, certainly you want to measure grades. Mm-hmm. That's a lagging indicator, though. What you want to measure is you want to measure the activities that are going to drive the grades.
Right.
So when
right.
the kids are young, you know, it's tell me about your homework. What do you have? They got to tell me the expectation and all of that. Kind of, we clear it. So you got to have this module done or this and the other. Okay. Well, we'll bring it down when you're done, mm-hmm. and I'll inspect it. And after that, so see, now we're actually. And I remember when Lucy was little, I remember she hit a period because she's kind of the artistic, unstructured one. In boundaries interviews, she's one that always gets the focus.
Yeah.
But she wanted to be in charge of her homework. But the reality was the grades weren't reflecting in a couple of areas that she was getting it done. And so she had to learn that, well, you can be in charge of it when it's working. It's not working yet,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm going to be inspecting it until, and then when she got in control of it, she got it back.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they feel a lot better, too, when they take control, and so it sounds that you're really transferring a lot of control to your kids.
They already have it.
Well, they don't know. But you're absolutely right. Who doesn't?
Tell me the toddler does not have control of that voice.
I
don't.
Yeah, exactly.
What I have, you know, it's interesting. In Galatians 4, Paul says, when we were children, we were under guardians and managers until the date set forth by the father,
mm-hmm.
which is a bar mitzvah. They're bat mitzvah. Now you're an adult. Well, under means under. Under is an important word. Under means that's like governance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I do. Here's what I have control of. I have control of the food
that comes in the house.
Yeah.
Right.
I got control of the car that takes them places they want to go. I have control of the dessert. I have control of the toys. I control everything.
Do you have control of your child's phone and computer?
Absolutely.
Okay. You're nice. I used to say to my kids, I own all that stuff. I own your computer. I own your phone. I own the car. I own, even if they paid for it, it's under my governance.
It's governance. You own the decision rights, ultimately.
Yeah. Well, see, you're so much nicer than I.
What do you mean?
I would just say I own it. That's the way it is.
No, I do that, too. When I was first teaching the girls about chores, you know, at a family meeting, and I think I told you this one time. I said, okay, kids, nobody lives here for free. Okay? Everybody understand that? Nobody lives here for free. Mm-hmm. So everybody's got to contribute. And we're going to put all the chores up on the board here. And everybody gets to pick theirs. Okay, so first one, somebody's going to pay the mortgage. Who wants that? So you don't see any hands go up, right? Yeah, I go, okay, I'll take that one.
Okay.
Somebody's got to do all the shopping and go, you know, and do the, and we're going, somebody's got to pay the phone bill. Somebody's got to, and you're not seeing their hands go up. Right. And I go, remember, no, you got to take something or you can't live here, right? Mm-hmm. Who wants to feed Riley? Hands start to go up, right?
Yeah.
Who wants to load the dishwasher? Hands go up. Because they know they can't live there for free. They got to do something, so they're going to pick and choose.
And they sure don't want to do what you're doing and Tori's doing.
Because they think all this just falls out of the sky, right?
Yeah. Well, Henry, we only have a minute or two left, and this has been really, really fun. The only last
thing... By the way, can I say one thing real quick?
Yeah, sure.
Get the anger out of it, parents.
Thank you.
Get the anger out of it.
It's not personal.
It's not personal to you, and it's not usable by your child. You know, you want them to move towards the command that you're giving them, and we don't move towards something that is against us. And so anger is an against emotion, and you're asking them to move towards barbed wire by obeying and internalizing your command if it's angry. Remember, the Bible says it is the kindness of the Lord that leads us to repentance. They're only going to move towards a limit, a boundary, or a command that's done in kindness.
Right. But that's hard. But you're absolutely right. And what I believe is the more you do it that way and the more you depersonalize it, the easier it gets for parents.
Oh, it does. But let me push back a little bit on if it has to be hard. Okay, Meg, I want you to go... We're up on the, third floor of this. I want you to go jump out of the window.
Mm-hmm. No, thanks, Henry.
Okay, now, do you sound mad when you're saying no?
No, I think that's silly what you just told me.
Yeah, you're not mad at all. You just set a limit. You said, no, I'm not going to do that.
I'm not going to do that.
Give me the keys of the car. No, I'm going to do that.
Not going to do that. Yeah.
It's midnight.
Right.
Instead of, are you kidding me? Midnight? You know, why? You don't have to get mad.
Right.
Set limits.
Right. You know, and the idea of setting them ahead of time, letting kids know what the expectations are, you know, and then enforcing those by saying, you know, now what am I going to do? You broke curfew, and you know what the consequences are, so I got to do it.
And I would even, my kids would hate this, but it always worked. I mean, it's good. I'd say, oh, that's a bummer for you. I feel for you. you're gonna have to come in 15 minutes early.
Yeah.
Hope you figured it out.
Yeah.
Okay, what's for lunch? You know,
right.
You empathize with them about what they've lost. Mm-hmm. Sorry this has happened.
Right. But you're always giving them the choice to either do it or not.
Yeah. And they will scream. Do we have time for me to tell you one quick story?
Sure.
Lucy, who is just, she's such an incredible kid. She's 16 now. And Lucy had some pretty severe fear and anxiety issues. She got locked in a bathroom on an airplane, and we didn't know. She was locked in, and turbulence came, and then she couldn't get out. And so she developed this fear of bathrooms. And so that fear started to generalize to, you know, like we go to restaurants, and she wouldn't go to the bathroom without her sister or her mom going with her. And then she started not wanting to do sleepovers, you know, and started, I'm a psychologist, right? So I know that there is no way I'm going to let fear make this child's life small.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just said, Lucy, I'm going to help you, but I want you to begin to face your fears. And so I told her what I was going to be requiring of her. And, you know, at the moment, it's like, oh, yeah, well, you're going out to dinner with us. You're going to the bathroom. Okay? Mom's not going to go with you because the only people get to go to dinner are people in the restaurant can get up and go to the bathroom. So we go, and she didn't want to go, and she wants them to go. And then I said, okay, well, you know, can't have dinner here if you can't go to the bathroom, so we're going to have to leave.
Oh.
You and me. I mean, Mom and Olivia are going to stay, but you and I are going to have to go home. And she goes, no. And I mean, it escalated. And finally, I mean, she's starting to cry and scream in the restaurant. And I'm taking her outside, and she's screaming. And, you know, all I can see is parenting author gets arrested for child abuse because it's so chaotic in there.
Yeah.
But I had to walk her down to, you know, walk down in the taxi stand. And when she realized we're going home, if she doesn't at least try this, then she said, okay, I'll try.
Mm-hmm.
There were other times when she'd call from a sleepover at 10:30 at night, screaming and crying, come get me, Mom. Come get me. I'm scared, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, Tori, no. Tell her she's staying.
Mm.
And a number of things like that. So, because that has to do its work.
That's hard as a parent.
Oh, it was awful.
But
let me tell you the last chapter. So I was doing, I have this thing called boundaries.me that people can subscribe to, and it's ongoing boundaries content. And so, in a lot of this video, as well as, you know, interviews and little tips and all this. And so, we were filming it at my house in a segment, and Lucy came home from school, and I said, Liz, let me interview you about boundaries. And she rolls her eyes and goes, okay. So I interviewed her. I said, so what are some good ways that parents can set boundaries with teenagers, and what are some bad ways? And so we talk about all this. And I said, one of the questions was, have there, and she told me all the crummy ways I had done it, and it got real funny.
Of course, yeah.
And so then I said, well, have I ever set some boundaries that you really hated that you think were good for you, you know? Mm-hmm. And she goes, yeah, when you made me face my fears. She said, because now I'm not afraid anymore, and I can do all this stuff.
Wow.
And she said, and I hated you.
Mm-hmm.
She said, but now I'm glad you did it.
Wow.
So you're going to go through some hard times with some of these limits. Mm-hmm. You're going to be hated.
Really hard. But that's great parenting, because you had your eyes on her
it's all about the future.
After she had gotten through her anxiety. And to say, you can do this, but it's going to be really hard, and I'm going to be here having your back, kind of going, you can do it, push, push, push.
It's interesting when the Bible describes, you know, David's problematic son, one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It says, because David had never vexed him about his behavior. He had never caused him any pain about his behavior. He had never disciplined him.
It feels so non-intuitive as a parent, because it feels like our intuition, and I think it's a cultural thing as well, where we feel good parenting is sort of getting in the background and letting kids do what they want because they'll find their way, and they have a personality, and they have the ability to choose the right way, and they don't. I mean, they just don't. And I think for parents to realize that is one of the most
important. Well, they don't until they do. That's the other side of it. Is now we have a generation, I find, as many problems in over-parenting as I do in lack of limits. These parents are way over-parenting now. Mm-hmm. Way, 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 way.
But over-parenting in the wrong way.
In the wrong ways, yeah.
They're not setting limits. They're not developing character. They're not setting those boundaries. And they're not inflicting pain.
Right.
They're just sort of hovering and trying to micromanage, which is really what you were talking about, is trying to assert their control in all areas of the child's life, which is suffocating for a child.
It's just terrible, and it's non-stage appropriate. It's way, way, way. I mean, the kids are way too old for the parents to be doing the stuff they're doing for them,
mm-hmm.
or allowing the stuff they're allowing.
Yeah.
I remember when our girls were little, a parent asking about something about go getting ready for school or but something, it was kind of at the end of a morning chain of behavior. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying, oh, getting up, you know, in time to whatever. And I said, well, I don't understand. Why aren't they already up and dressed on their own and down at the breakfast table by the time the food's there? And they literally, this was like the kids were maybe, what, 6 or 7 or something. And they literally looked at me like I was crazy. You can't expect a 7-year-old to get up and do all that and all that. I go, I don't know what you're talking about. My kids do that all the time. Mm-hmm. A kid can get up and can set a clock and get up and show up on time or
right.
dress themselves if they've been required to.
Yep. Well, Henry, this has been wonderful. I have learned a lot, even though it's a little too late for me. My kids are grown and gone, but I have grandkids.
Well, don't you think God gives his kids to practice? So, you know, in the next life when he he says that. He says that. He says, you've been faithful in this. Now you're going to be over 10 cities. There's something coming that all
there
this
is
training for.
Yeah. So, and we reap the rewards of doing a good job, but a hard job of being a good parent. So boundaries, discipline, really, really important for kids.
It's hard to be hated, but make sure you're being hated for good reasons, because sometimes we're hated for bad reasons.
Right.
Because we're causing injury. You know, Ephesians and Colossians both, when it talks about, good parenting, it says don't dishearten your kids or provoke them to wrath. Mm-hmm. Both of those are very, very important to make sure we don't do.
Right. Yeah. Well, on that note, we're going to be ending. Thank you, Henry. We'll go back to our SMART conference. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Good to be with you, always.
Where do you want people to go?
Go to boundaries.me.
Okay.
Or drcloud.com. You can find it there. And I'll be your boundaries coach.
There you go.
And sign up.
And we all need one.
It's fun.
Thanks, Henry. Points to ponder. 1, be intentional about setting boundaries for your kids. One of the biggest mistakes we parents make is disciplining on the fly. In other words, we create rules and consequences during an argument or when a child has acted up. This makes discipline very ineffective. One of the most important things to do for successful discipline is to decide what boundaries you need to set for each child. Explain them to the child when you're both relaxed, and then tell him or her what the consequences will be for crossing the boundary or breaking the rule. This makes it easier for both of you to know what to expect when your child acts up, and your kids have to know what is going to happen if they break a rule. If they don't know what's going to happen, they're not going to pay any attention to you. When your child knows what the rules are and what the consequences for breaking the rules will be, he is far more likely to keep them. 2, choose 1 to 3 behaviors that are most offensive to you and discipline for these first. Sometimes it gets overwhelming when we're disciplining our kids, particularly young kids. We feel that we say no all day long. Our kids don't listen and we burn out. So pick 1, 2, or 3 behaviors that are dangerous, offensive, or drive you craziest, and then discipline for those. Get your child to obey you in those things, and then move on to other rules. As I said, we often get caught up into the trap of disciplining for too much at a time. So choose those behaviors, probably your child's worst behaviors, get them under control, and then move on to another. As I said, with toddlers, our days can be filled with 100 no's. So especially with toddlers, figure out which behaviors are normal for their age, for a 2-year-old. Say, painting on the walls, pulling the dog's tail, coloring on the floor, building something and smashing it, bringing sand into the house. These are normal child behaviors. They're behaviors you don't like, but you wouldn't discipline for them. Discipline for clear acts of defiance against you. In other words, you told your child, no, you can't run in the street. No, you can't come close to the fire. No, you can't hit your sister. And when your child knows the rule and he looks at you or she looks at you and says, watch this, mom, with her facial expression, boom, you discipline for that. Clear acts of defiance is what you're disciplined for. 3, once you set a boundary, stick to it. One of the hardest parts of disciplining our kids is following through. You know why? We're tired. We tell our kids what the rules are or the boundaries, and we give a consequence only to fail to keep it. And this is normal. We're tired and our kids know just how to wear us down. So if you tell your teen that a curfew is 11 p.m. and that if he comes home later than that, his car will be taken away, and he comes home at 11:20, the boundary's crossed. The car gets taken away for a period of time, no matter what. I don't care if he argues with you, if he tells you unreasonable, if he gives you a good answer for coming in 11:20. The car gets taken away. The boundary was crossed. Why is it important to stick to your boundaries and stick to the rules? Because that's how life is. You and I have to stick to boundaries. You can't show up to work half an hour late. There are many rules that we have to obey, and it's really important to teach our kids they have to obey them too. And the only way to do this is once you set a boundary, stick to it. All right, parents, it's time to get social. I want to hear from you and I want to interact with you. You can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Meg Meeker MD. Or if you have a question, send it to askmeg@megmeekermd.com. Today I have a question from Kristen, and she writes, Hi, I have 2 strong-willed girls, ages 3 and 6. I would say that I have a mild, authoritative parenting style. My goals are to stop yelling and to teach with kindness and motivate my kids without fear and threats. I would like to learn how to stop parenting in a confrontational and threatening way and start disciplining in a more loving, motivational, and respectful way. Well, first of all, Kristen, I love that you're beginning to identify what your parenting style is. And authoritative parenting style is wonderful because it's right in the middle, and I talk about this in my course. First of all, to get you to stop yelling, you're yelling at your kids because you're frustrated with them, but you're also frustrated with yourself because when your kids act up and you can't get them under control, you start to think, what's wrong with me as a mom? I'm a bad mom. My friends' kids wouldn't act like this. And you get very frustrated with them and themselves. So I really encourage you to focus on your yelling. You need to stop yelling, and we'll talk about that in just a second. You also talk about motivating your kids with fear and threats. No, no, no. A threat means you're going to tell them that you're going to do something if they don't do this, but they don't pay any attention to you because you're giving them a threat. You're not giving them a consequence. So I think where you're really falling down, Kristen, is you don't have serious consequences or you're not following through. Once you have a serious consequence and once you follow through, your yelling's going to stop. Your using fear and threats is going to go away because your kids are really going to pay attention to you. You're frustrated because your kids don't pay any attention to you. Here's what I encourage you to do. You need to do different things for your 3-year-old than your 6-year-old. Let's start with your 6-year-old. I imagine your 6-year-old is in kindergarten. Think about something that your kindergartner does that drives you crazy. Let's say she hits her sister. Okay, I don't know what she does. And you sit down with her and you look her in the eye. And when you're relaxed, you say, honey, I've noticed that you've developed a bad habit of hitting your sister. We're going to stop this and I'm going to help you. So whenever I see you hit your sister, you're going to have to go to your room for an hour and dessert is going to get taken away for 5 days, something like that. Or you need to make it more severe. In other words, you give her a consequence that she doesn't want. Why? Because she has to be motivated to avoid it. She's never going to stop hitting her sister if she believes the consequence is no big deal. So you find out what she really wants and you take that away, not for a day, but for 3 days. And if she doesn't mind the 3 days, then you do it for 5. In other words, your consequences really need to matter to her. At 3, you pick a few consequences. They have to be immediate. They can't be long-term. You can't tell a 3-year-old you're going to go to bed early for 5 days because they have no clue about the concept of time. I really believe once you get the rule set very clear in your own mind and in your daughter's minds, and you get a very serious consequence that you're going to give and you stick to it, you won't have to yell, and you're not going to have to use threats, and you're not going to have to use fear. And you're using those things because everything is out of control. So you need to get everything under control. The other thing that can make you yell is when you take their bad behavior personally. In other words, your daughter's doing something horrible. She's, you know, hitting her sister, or she's doing something that you've told her never to do. Or she's just doing something very offensive. When she does that, subconsciously, you feel like you're a very bad mom, because a good mom's daughter would never act that way. But since you're a bad mom, you have a bad daughter who acts that way. We all do it. We take our kids' behavior personally, like it's a reflection of what we're doing. So what I want you to do is to look at your child and pretend she's someone else's child. Remove yourself. Say, when she punches her sister, this has nothing to do with me and nothing to do with my parenting. She just likes to hit. So I have to reprimand her like that. But when she hits her sister, don't allow yourself to get emotionally tangled so you feel that it's part your fault and you don't discipline well and so on and so forth. She hit her sister because she felt like it. Here are the consequences. Boom. Now, the first few times you do it, she's going to yell. She's going to scream. She's going to call you a bad mom. Push through that. Do it over and over and over, and I guarantee you her bad behavior is going to stop, and your yelling is going to come to a stop as well. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Henry Cloud. Check out his website at drcloud.com. Once again, that's drcloud.com. He's on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. Just search for Dr. Henry Cloud on your internet browser. Let's recap my points to ponder. 1, be intentional about setting boundaries for your kids. 2, choose 1 to 3 behaviors that are most offensive to you and discipline for those first. 3, once you set a boundary, stick to it. So until next time, parents, always remember that great kids are raised, not born.
Hey, this is Bobby, producer of Meg Meeker's Parenting Great Kids podcast. We hope you've enjoyed listening to episode 76, Setting Boundaries with Kids. And thanks to you, Dr. Meg's Parenting Revolution has grown to over 3 million downloads. You can like Dr. Meeker on Facebook and follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Meg Meeker MD. As a reminder, go to MegMeekerMD.com and sign up for her newsletter for giveaway opportunities and updates. And don't forget to share the podcast, write us a review, and click subscribe so you won't miss an episode.